Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer alongside John Adams and Adam Sparks of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Tennessee is flying high after laying a beatdown on the Missouri Tigers on Saturday. Adam Sparks was out in Columbia to cover that one. John had his commentary. I caught a portion of that game, was actually down on assignment on a different game. But Adam, tell us how it went down. How did Tennessee all of a sudden become world beaters in a week's time?
Yeah, I've been pondering this over the last couple of days of the old question when you get one of these. Is this more what Tennessee did or more what Missouri didn't? I think it's maybe a little of the latter, but I don't want to shortchange what that offense did. Something went crazy because Missouri was a 3-point favorite, and this was a 38-point win by the Vols. So something was askew. There was a perfect storm a little bit there. Number one, Missouri's got some major issues. They fired their D-line coach the next day, so they recognize those issues at least. But when you're beaten up front that much by a Tennessee team that, you know, has a lot of injuries and some questions on the offensive line, and at least from a preseason perspective, had quite a number of questions on the defensive line. When you're beaten that bad at the line of scrimmage, I think you have to question a little bit what's going on with Missouri. But again, I mean, you play who you play, and that had to be the first game for Tennessee. You guys will know better than I will, but that I can think of in quite a while where you could say the Vols could have just scored at will. You were almost surprised when they didn't score. You know, there was a fourth down play they didn't get on the goal line. I can think of maybe a couple of others, but they could have scored 100. And I really can't believe that offense looked that good that soon. I think the follow-up to that game is going to tell us whether that is the exception or the rule, but the South Carolina game, because I'm still a little bit startled of what we saw.
In a way, what might have been stunning to fans too was that through the years, how many times has a Tennessee coach guru'd somebody? I mean, seriously, we know Tennessee does not have an abundance of talent. It's one of the least talented Tennessee teams I've seen. Yet, with Josh Heupel's coach and his offensive staff, Tennessee was able to take advantage of every one of Missouri's myriad of weaknesses. And I just thought that was significant because it hasn't happened around here that often. I mean, Tennessee's played infirm defenses before with maybe not as many that were as infirm as Missouri's, but still, I give Heupel credit on capitalizing on these weaknesses. Kentucky scored 35 on Missouri. Boston College scored 41, and those both have really good offensive line and good running attacks. Yet Tennessee, with a crippled offensive line and an okay running attack, it did much better against Missouri. So I think it was really an encouraging game for Tennessee fans. And again, when you see a team play the way Missouri did Saturday, you wonder about all kinds of issues like chemistry and what's going on behind the scenes, I think.
Let me jump in right there because you're talking about coaching, John. And John and I started this conversation the other day, and I'll bring it on here. Eli Drinkwitz, I think, is in his second year. Heupel's obviously in his first. Heupel was an offensive coordinator that put up a lot of points there in 2016-17. I have to think that, I know it's just one game, but I have to think that the Missouri fan looks at that game and says, did we hire the wrong coach? Did we go after the wrong coach? Josh Heupel, you know, hey, he had two really good years there. When Eli Drinkwitz got that job, he was, at App State, had one great year. But Heupel was 2 years into Central Florida, also had a phenomenal year there. You know, did they hire the wrong coach? Now that's question number one. Question number two is, if Josh Heupel had been offered the job at Missouri a year before he got the Tennessee job, does he take it? Blake, does he take it? You've covered Missouri. Is that a good enough job for him to have left Central Florida?
At that time, maybe not. I think after year three at Central Florida, I think he probably would have, because things were going downhill for him at Central Florida. Now, I won't know. He had three straight winning seasons, but year three, I think that Central Florida fan base after year three was not eating out of the palm of Josh Heupel's hand so much anymore. So I think at that point, if Missouri comes calling, yeah, I think you listen. After year two, when the good times are still rolling pretty good, I don't know. Maybe you show patience and wait for a bigger fish at that point. But yeah, Adam, I agree to your point of just the frustration, I think, within Missouri fans, and having covered that program for 4 years, I still have some contacts there. And certainly, I think that's a very frustrated fan base right now. And I think I tweeted this as the game was unfolding in lopsided fashion. Of course, this is maybe just me being a columnist now and thinking I need to air some opinions, and perhaps that leads to knee-jerk reactions, but I'll stand by it. I tweeted that Missouri has been unmasked as a total fraud, and I was one pumping the hype for the Tigers in the preseason. I thought this team was going to be pretty good, and they looked terrible. But part two of that, I said, I think Josh Heupel's rebuild at Tennessee is ahead of schedule. Now, I think it's undeniable that Missouri's been unmasked as a fraud, so we don't have to debate that. But how about part two of that? Do you guys think I'm right when I say Josh Heupel's rebuild is ahead of schedule? Or is that too much being a victim of the moment and one result?
Fraud is that's definitely a columnist word. Both of you guys, frauds on the tip of your tongue. I'm still in beat writer lexicon. Disappointment. I don't even know what fraud means. I can't use that word.
No, I read your column today, Adam, so you can use that word.
Okay. Beat column. Yeah, that's like a half of a column. Whatever was between disappointment and fraud, I guess I can use it. I mean, I hate to hammer this point, but it's the follow-up. The follow-up tells me if this is ahead of schedule. Because if they lose to South Carolina, which is, you know, solid on defense, I don't see as much there on offense, phenomenal on special teams, which doesn't surprise you since they're coached by Beamer. But, you know, that's a winnable game. If Tennessee wins that game, then you've got, I don't know if back-to-back is a winning streak, but then you've got a trend. And then you've got, I wrote this the other day that in the previous 4 years, Tennessee was winless against Georgia and Florida, but they were 2-2 against South Carolina, Missouri, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. Those four teams you should beat if you're a Tennessee coach. Not necessarily in year one because it's a rebuild, but those are the teams that you beat to say now you're moving up into another tier, that middle tier. And so if you beat South Carolina, then you got back-to-back. You know, a stat that I saw on Josh Heupel that I looked up is that, you know, he had 28 wins at Central Florida. 26 of those 28 were part of back-to-backs or winning streaks. Only two of his wins were isolated with a loss before and a loss after. In other words, he wins in bunches. It's rare that he just wins, does a one-off. And so if you follow that, then Tennessee's going to win this one. And if they beat South Carolina, then I can say they're ahead of schedule. You lose South Carolina, no. Then last week was more about Missouri, not about Tennessee.
I guess based on my preseason expectations, Tennessee's rebuild is going according to form. I don't think it's exceeded expectations. I looked at those Missouri and Pittsburgh games as swing games. I really thought Tennessee would beat Pittsburgh and lose to Missouri. And I picked accordingly, missed both games. But so 3-2 is right where I thought Tennessee would be. And after South Carolina, 4-2 is right where I thought Tennessee would be. South Carolina has absolutely no offense. So I think Tennessee's defense, though it may not dominate the way Tennessee's offense did against Missouri, it still could be headed for a really good Saturday. So I think the rebuild's going accordingly. But I think fans, and this is important, think the fan perception is that it's going better.
Well, yeah, because I put that out there, John. I'm kind of I mean, warping opinion as I see fit. But no, truly, I mean, to defend my stance, I hear what you guys are saying on the record, and I agree. Like, record-wise, they're on schedule. But where I think I say they're ahead of schedule in this rebuild is not so much record, but what we're actually seeing on the field, in that I thought Tennessee's defense was going to be pretty lousy this year. I mean, this is a collection of journeymen and misfits, really. I mean, honestly, I mean, you got Jerry Banks, who was off the program, then reinstated, and he's out there intercepted passes on Saturday. You got guys that are left over from Butch Jones's tenure. I mean, seriously, some of these guys go back to, not back to the last head coach, they go back to the head coach before that. You got a bunch of transfers out there playing. You know, I mean, to me, this defense, I thought was going to be borderline rubbish this season. And it's not exactly Georgia's defense, but I think the defense has been holding its own. And I think offensively, they had the wrong quarterback out there early in the season. I think that much is becoming apparent. But once they got the right quarterback in there, I mean, even in the first half against Florida, I feel like this offense has done a lot of good things. So I think in terms of record, yeah, to me, I think Tennessee is where I thought they'd be at this juncture in the season. But in terms of what we're seeing, I feel like the product's been a little bit better than maybe I would have expected through five games, given what Josh Heupel inherited.
Well, they've got an identity. I think that's important. You know, I think Jeremy Pruitt wanted to have the identity of, you know, kind of Alabama light, at least from a few years back, probably even more current Georgia, which is, you know, defense and toughness and win the line of scrimmage and a lot of the, you know, things that probably sound like Phil Fulmer maxims at the time that he was hired, right? We're getting back to those days, and that didn't come to fruition. So there was never an identity. There was an intent to have an identity, but it never materialized. With Heupel, when you see the performance of the other day, in parts of the first four games, but obviously in the Missouri game, you can see what that's going to look like or what that's supposed to look like. And so that's an identity. I think when you're Alabama and Georgia, you have to be good at everything, and maybe even Florida to some extent. But when you get to the second tier of the SEC, you can be really good at one thing and have that as an identity. And if it's going to be this up-tempo offense and put up a lot of points, that's what Lane Kiffin's trying to do. And I think Josh Heupel can do that as well. I think the rebuild is about that. It's about, you know, at least knowing where you're going and how you're going to get there. I feel like sometimes the last few years at Tennessee, it's been more of a generalized premise of how they're going to fix the program. At least Heupel, I think, has an idea.
You brought up Jeremy Pruitt's image. What was that saying about just fell off the turnip truck? Have you ever heard that saying? I'm not even sure I've got it right. Have you? Okay, I think that was the image he was working on.
Asparagus truck? Is that what you
mean? He does not eat asparagus, and leave that alone. I bet he still doesn't eat it, even in New York. And the Giants won a game Sunday, didn't they?
I believe they credited Jeremy afterwards.
Well, it's really been a while since Tennessee had a coach who was known for something, and that showed up on the field. Jeremy Pruitt was known for defense when he came here. He was known for defense at Alabama, at Georgia, at Florida State. He's known for defense anywhere he's got NFL talent, which he didn't have at Tennessee. So his defense was pretty much a train wreck. But Butch Jones, his experience was on offense. Derek Dooley, experience on offense. But nobody ever went into a game thinking, yeah, well, old Dooley or Butch Jones, he'll outsmart those defensive guys on the other side of the field. I guess you'd have to go back to Lane Kiffin when you thought going into a game that Lane Kiffin's offense, he would work some magic, though he couldn't Saturday for Ole Miss. But when he was at Tennessee, he would work some magic and keep your team in the game. I think people see with this Tennessee team and with Josh Heupel, even though he might be outmanned talent-wise, he'll come up with a few tricks, keep you in the game. And, you know, I think that was apparent even before the Missouri game, because we saw time and again when Tennessee receivers were open, you know, even in losses, Florida and Pittsburgh, the quarterback just couldn't hit them. Or, as in the case of Florida, when there was just a crucial drop pass that you guys could have caught. I probably couldn't, but you guys could have. He was doing okay schematically. It wasn't as though I thought, well, the defensive guys are just out coaching him. I didn't think that at all. And I've thought that a lot of times with Tennessee head coaches in the past.
Now, I will say the rebuilding the program or trying to get it back on schedule to rebuild, I think there's got to be at least two stages to that. There's one where if it's going ahead of schedule, there's one that's really good coaching, smoke and mirrors, outcoach the other guy, do more with little. That's where Josh Heupel may be at or may be getting to right now, especially with the game the other day. I have less talent, but I can outcoach you and outscheme you. That gets you so far. I think that can build optimism and momentum. Stage two has to be you go and recruit good enough players so then you're not overachieving. Right now, they have the potential to overachieve this year, but to get where they need to long term, year maybe two, but certainly year three, year four, that's got to be where you go get a lot of four-star and a few five-star players. And so, you know, we'll wait and see if that happens. You know, I mean, look at Eli Drinkwitz, right? I mean, he at Missouri, he overachieved year one. He's underachieving year two. Year one, he was, and even you can say with this with Lane Kiffin, is year one, hey, this guy just has a scheme, and he's doing a whole lot with what he didn't have left over from the previous coach. And that narrative runs for a while. It doesn't run infinitely. Eventually, you've got to have really good players, and that's what Josh Heupel is going to have to do in that second stage.
John, let me just say, I loved earlier when you used the word guru'd as a verb. Josh Heupel just came out and guru'd somebody.
That sounds like a term you pick up off ESPN, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe you'll set the narrative for that.
No, I apologize to my English teachers through the years for that.
Is that like an apostrophe D, or is it like ED, like glued?
You could do it either way. It's kind of like the word kudos that Philip Fulmer pronounces kadoos. I put it K apostrophe D-O-O-Z-E, but I think Blake and Mike Wilson both spell it differently.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
I like it as K-A-D-O-O-Z-E. Just like it sounds, kadoos.
With that apostrophe, that was kind of how I thought it sounded too.
Well, if you want to give us kadoos on this podcast, we'd really appreciate it. If you don't already, go ahead and click subscribe to the Volunteer State. We really appreciate it. That way you don't miss an episode. And if you want to give us special kadoos, you can go ahead and give us a rating or review. Those ratings and reviews help us get in front of more listeners. And you can also check out John and I on a separate podcast called SEC Football Unfiltered. And John and I over there on that podcast bring our genius takes and analysis and made up words as we take a look at all 14 teams in the SEC, the hot topics and the trends. This week we're discussing which of the SEC's 14 fan bases ought to be ticked off right now. And I will tell you, Tennessee does not appear on that list, but the team they played Saturday does. Adam, you've been talking about the South Carolina game, and let's turn the page here before we go to that, because as nice as it is to, I guess, sit and revel in the Tennessee performance on Saturday, maybe for this fan base, the reality is, and Josh Heupel mentioned this on Monday, you got to turn the page, and all coaches say that, but I really thought that you know, that was the tone coming across throughout Josh Heupel's press conference on Monday, was one game's great, but sort of to your point, have to come out there and do it again. Going forward, though, is there something especially, a lot of things look good on Saturday, I get that, but was there something especially eyebrow-raising or noteworthy that came out of Saturday that made you think, like, hey, this is something this team can continue to be putting forward week after week that will help them win games like this Saturday against South Carolina?
Again, there is that possibility of fool's gold because the opponent may be bad. We'll find out more about that as Missouri's season goes on. But quarterback is settled. I know that's been our topic for, seems like, forever. Quarterback is settled. You guys will be happy to know that the depth chart that was released this week actually had Hendon Hooker as the starter. So
good for him.
He is no longer a co-backup with Harrison Bailey. He has been promoted to a starter now for his fourth start. So he was even asked at the press conference. Somebody asked, he said, does this confirm that he is QB1? And Heupel said, this week he is.
Thank God Heupel said that. I heard that question. And first off, I thought I didn't know that really needed to be asked. Not that I really don't criticize reporters' questions, because I've asked some stupid ones over time, and it got a good answer that Josh Heupel went out there and confirmed that he was QB1. But I really appreciated that Josh did not try to beat around the bush. I mean, if he would have said anything other then yes, Hendon is the starting quarterback. I mean, that would have just sounded a little
That would have been its own story, yeah. I mean, but, you know, that is something because now we're getting, it's not just proof of concept anymore. I think Hendon Hooker is a guy that can produce in this offense. He's 10 touchdown passes, one interception. His decision-making has been good. He's number five in the country in passer rating and pass efficiency. So he is a lot of the things that Josh Heupel said he wanted out of a quarterback that he thought he was going to get with Joe Milton. He's actually getting with Hendon Hooker. I mean, decision making, accuracy, be able to do something with his legs, to be able to execute the offense. He's checking all his boxes. Milton didn't. So back there, old narrative, he picked the wrong quarterback to begin with. He has the right one now. That's what I see on the offensive side. I hate to go too much into the good things on the offense because I want to see it against another opponent. Defensively, there's depth, and I did not think that was possible this year. You know, the other day, Trayvon Flowers was out. Now, he'll be back in the game this week. But he was out at safety, and so they had to put in Christian Charles, a freshman safety. They put in a couple other guys. They moved Theo Jackson out of the star position and put Denico Slaughter at star. And they churned out, I don't know, like 7-8 guys in the secondary with the first team. They're in the first quarter, and they didn't miss a beat there. And, you know, Connor Bazelak at Missouri, even though that team was terrible, Bazelak's a good quarterback. And so the fact that they have some on the back seven, that they have depth, I think is a pretty good sign of many things that we could say they're ahead of schedule. I think the fact that there's a little bit of depth on the defense, I think, is something I didn't expect to see till next year. That will serve them well in the next couple of games.
Hendon Hooker, to me, that was a really complete game, and he protected the ball. He showed a nice touch on his passes, a deep ball for a touchdown. As Adam said, he's kind of what you would think Josh Heupel would want with this offense. So I feel better about Hendon Hooker than I have all season, and I thought he should have been the quarterback ever since I saw Joe Milton play. As far as the defense, you know, when you don't have really any stars on defense, although Theo Jackson is probably playing at an all-SEC level, otherwise you don't have really any stars there. When you lose a guy, if you got decent depth, it doesn't hurt you as much because you're not losing this great super player. So that does, I guess, impact the depth a little bit. And I also wonder now about Tim Banks, or as we called him, Tim Brown, I think, when he was hired. He's kind of a blank slate to me. I really didn't know exactly how good he was. He was a co-defensive coordinator at Penn State. That's always kind of a nebulous title. But I like the way the defense is played. Go back to last season when, and I'll use guru again, Jeremy Pruitt, supposed to be a defensive guru. I think Tim Banks' defense looks more, let's see, another word, more guru-ish. Write that one down, and you can use that in the column, Blake.
I'm writing it down right now, John.
Yeah, use it as a question to a coach. I think they would be impressed. His defense is performing better than Jeremy Pruitt's did. Doesn't play tight. It plays aggressively. Sometimes it makes mistakes, sure. And his pass coverage has been inconsistent. But other teams had really a hard time stopping Missouri. I mean, Boston College gave up 34 to Missouri. Kentucky gave up 28 to Missouri. Tennessee gave up 24, and one of those was on a kick return. So that's one thing that has impressed me so far. It's just five games, but I would say the defense is ahead of schedule, I guess.
And I think the fact that you said there aren't many stars on that side of the ball is that they've schemed it in the way that we have complimented Heupel on how he has schemed the offense to make up for a lack of talent, deficiency of talent. I think Banks has done at least that, if not more so, on the defensive side. He's dialed up blitzes. He's dialed up run blitzes. I mean, they right now, Tennessee is, I think, it's ninth in the country in tackles for loss. That's a shocking stat. that top 10 in the country in tackles for loss. And I was just counting these guys. There's 20 different players on defense that have a tackle for loss this year. And a good bit of them are the back seven, linebackers and DBs. I mean, Theo Jackson's got 6.5. Jeremy Banks at linebacker's got 5.5. Jalen McCullough's got 2.5. You've got a lot of safety blitzes, a lot of that star position blitzes. They've stopped the run well at times because they're bringing guys up in the box. There's some gambling involved there, but I think it matches what they're doing on offense. They're playing fast, they're playing aggressive, and they're utilizing their talent really well on the defensive side. Again, maybe even better than Heupel's doing on offense, and that's saying something after the last game we just saw.
Yeah, Tim Banks is making me look foolish because, John, as you alluded to, right after his hire, I could barely get his name right on this podcast. I called him Tim Brown like three times.
He was in a running back with the Eagles back when I was a kid. I don't know how. Oh, he's a wide receiver.
You said that last time I did that, John. He was a wide receiver for the Raiders and Notre Dame. I don't know how you think of the other Tim Brown.
I really like Tim Brown. I even remember, I think he was number 22.
Which Tim Brown? The Tim Brown who wore number 81 for the Raiders was the star, the Hall of Famer.
There was another Tim Brown besides the Raiders. Tim Brown. Apparently, I was not aware.
John got
confused. All over.
Yeah, I called Tim Banks Tim Brown, and then John was confused, thinking I was calling him the other Tim Brown, and it was really just a roundabout thing. And now we're going down that rabbit hole again. So,
despite those glitches, I think of both of you as podcast guru ease. Thank you.
I'm going to let that take us out the door. Three gurus trying to get it right. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.